good morning. It's certainly a pleasure to be here, to be able to stand in front of you. Good to see our visitors out of here. So good to see Lloyd. Mindful of those that are not here, of our own number, that are out and about. And just that time of year, it looks like people traveling. But I'm glad to be here this morning. We've got a lesson this morning that's entitled Blotted Out. What I would like to do is kind of explain what we've got going on here. Nathan Batty, when he was held his gospel meeting, he took Psalm 69. And he made reference to it. I believe the words he used were, he called it the favorite psalm of the apostles. Because there were so many references from Psalm 69 that were used again in the New Testament. And so for our study this month, we're going to kind of break it up and look at how Psalm 69 was used in Matthew and Mark and Luke and in John. How the Apostle Paul used it. But I picked the fun one. How is it used in the book of Revelation? Because there's a very clear and concise path that you can draw from Psalm 69 to the book of Revelation. I found this guy's picture because people do some pretty amazing things to get their names written in a book. This fellow's name is Ram Singh. I don't know how to pronounce his last name. Kahuan. That guy has a 14-foot mustache. And if you want to have your name written in the Guinness Book of World Records, then your mustache is going to have to be 14 foot 1 inch. Because that's how long that fellow's mustache is. At least I don't know how long it is now. That's how long it was when he took that picture. People do some crazy things to get recognition, to have their name written somewhere in a book. My question for you this morning, how much more important should it be for us to find our name written in the book of life? And that's what we're going to talk about this morning, the idea of having our names written. So our text will come from Psalm chapter 69. We're just going to look at a couple verses from it, verse 24 through 28. The psalmist says, David, pour out your indignation upon them, and let your wrathful anger take hold of them. Let their dwelling place be desolate. Let no one live in their tents. For they persecute the ones you have struck and talk of the grief of those you have wounded and add iniquity to their iniquity. And let them not come into your righteousness. Now verse 28. Let them be blotted out of the book of the living and not be written with the righteous. So that's what we're going to study here. This idea of Psalm 69 and how Nathan talked about unlocking the mystery. I want to talk about how Psalm 69, this passage, this idea of blotting out of the book of the living, is tied all the way through the Bible, all the way back into the early Old Testament, and really you see its most complete usage in the book of Revelation. So this is a great chapter for us to be able to study. Before we go further, though, we have a great opportunity, a great privilege, a great honor, and that's to go to God in a word of prayer. We'll do that now. Well, let me begin this morning by saying that y'all are part, I think what they call a beta test. I think that's what they call it. When you try a new idea to see if it works out. I've been playing around with this idea in my mind for a long time. I actually had a little bit of time this week. I thought it would be a good time to do it. If you noticed on this little note, there's some kind of little funny looking things up there. And I figure there's three types of people in the world. There's some people who know exactly what those are and how to use them. That means you're probably under the age of 40 or somewhere about that. Those are called a QR code. And QR codes came out a long time ago. I remember about 10 years ago in education, I thought they were just going to take off, but they never really did. And then a couple years ago, I guess that's one of the good things that came out of COVID, if there is any good things. You may have seen those before because a lot of restaurants didn't want to have menus that people touched. So they would have these little, what are called QR codes. So one group of people, you already know how to do it. You know that you can take your phone. You have an iPhone and you just hold that thing over the top of it and it's going to click something up to you. You just push your screen and if you put it on top of that one that's called presentation, it's going to pull up this slideshow that I've got right here. You can have that slideshow on your phone as I'm talking. If you push that one that says Spanish notes, this little thing right here becomes translated in Spanish. You have it on your phone. I think that's just one of the neatest things in the world. I put a couple more on the back. These are kind of some, I guess you would call a tangential lesson, an auxiliary lesson. It doesn't really, it adds to the understanding of it, but it's just something that would keep me from talking too long. And we'll get there when we get there. But you kind of gives you some homework, something you can do on your own. So this sermon kind of becomes the gift that keeps on giving. You can take this paper home, and you have access to some different ideas and thoughts. I've been playing around with this idea of the QR code. So like I said, there's one group of people, they already know how to do it. And they probably saw that, and you probably got it on your phone. So if you got your phone out, that's okay. But no Candy Crush, no online shopping, no Retro Bowl, Jake. You can't be getting on Facebook, but you might be able to. Technology's there, we might as well use it. If you have trouble seeing up here, maybe you can see it better on a phone or an iPad. The second group of people probably knew what that was, but don't know how to use it. If you want me to show you, I'll do the best I can after services. You want a tutorial? I don't understand all of it because there are different types of phones, updates, and whatnot. But we can probably figure out how to do it. Third group of people don't care, don't want it, don't have an iPhone. That's fine. Then we're just going to go on like we always do. Just ignore those little funny-looking boxes up there because it's not going to make any difference. We're going to have the sermon like we always would have. So there we go. Some QR lessons. Been wanting to do this for a while. We'll see how it works out. Now, the concept of a book of records maintained by God Almighty is actually pretty well taught throughout the entire Bible. You may never thought of that before. Let me give you a couple Old Testament references here. And again, some of this is going to be, Nathan called it the iceberg. That we get the tip of it. We get something that's told to us, but all we're seeing is the very tip. We may not be getting the whole picture. Sometimes those mysteries are not unlocked until later on, and some we still don't have full comprehension of. But we're going to get some little pieces, some little ideas, some little thoughts, and see how this concept is being drawn throughout the entire Scripture. We're going to start in Deuteronomy, the 29th chapter, verse 20. Deuteronomy 29 and 20, way back in the law. It says, "The Lord would not spare him, for then the anger of the Lord and his jealousy would burn against that man, and every curse that is written in this book would settle on him, and the Lord would blot out his name from under heaven." So even back in the old law, there was this concept that we would have our name under heaven, and if we did wrong, if we didn't fulfill our part of the covenant, that our name could be blotted out. It could be erased. It could be covered over, however you want to look at that. That's a pretty serious concept. So if you were a person who knew the Old Testament, who knew the Old Law, you knew exactly what that meant. And in fact, you probably had a little bit more understanding of it too. The idea of having your name blotted out. Well, then we get to Isaiah. Isaiah chapter 4, which is obviously a messianic chapter. I mean, you'll pick up very quickly on the messianic ideas that are brought forth here. He says, "In that day the branch of the Lord shall be beautiful and glorious, and the fruit of the earth shall be excellent and appealing for those of Israel who have escaped." That's that remnant idea. Verse 3, "And it shall come to pass that he who is left in Zion and remains in Jerusalem will be called holy, everyone who is recorded among the living in Jerusalem." See, there was a record. And I think Isaiah is using this metaphorically. But I think there really was a true record that was kept there in Israel of those that were the living. The record of the nation of Israel were kept. They were precise. They included a list of those that were alive. And so guess what happened when you died? Your name was removed from that list. And so in a very literal sense, there was a book of records that were kept in the temple. You ever wondered how, when we get into Matthew and there's one in Luke, these long little genealogies of Jesus, that so-and-so begat so-and-so and so-and-so begat so-and-so. Do you ever wonder how they remembered that? It's because they had a book. They had a record, and they could trace it all the way back to what tribe they originally came from. I don't believe the Jews can do that today. But there was a time that they could trace their heritage and their lineage all the way back to the original tribe. Because that was important, especially because only certain people could be priests. You had to be from the tribe of Levi to be a priest. So there's an idea of this record. I did not put this verse in here, so you may want to put this if you want to add this. Deuteronomy, the 25th chapter. In Deuteronomy chapter 25, there's kind of an account. And today here in the year 2022, we kind of look at this as if this is the craziest thing ever. But you remember under the law of Moses that if a man had a wife and the man died without having a child, that it became the responsibility of a brother to marry the wife and continue the family name. So we look at that now and think that's just crazy. But that's what the law of Moses said. So in Deuteronomy, the 25th chapter, let me read here verse 6. And it says, "And it shall be that the firstborn son which she bears will succeed to the name of his dead brother, that his name may not be blotted out of Israel." And so the concept is, if a husband and a wife did not have a child and the husband died, it became the responsibility of a brother to step in to continue the family genealogy, continue the family name. And if a child was born, then it says that he would take the name of the dead man's name. And so that way the lineage could be continued. But if a child was not produced, it says that man's name was to be blotted out. Literally. It was to be literally taken out of the Jewish record, the record of the genealogy, because they didn't exist anymore. That lineage stopped when that man died, if there was not a male heir. Pretty serious business. That was very, very serious on the eyes, on the minds of anyone who was a believer of the Old Testament. So I think there really was a book. I think there was a literal book that may be here that David is referencing in some sense. But we're going to see how it's going to be applied spiritually as well. Ezekiel 13 and 9 talks about the record of the house of Israel. "My hand will be against the prophets who envision futility and who divine lies. They shall not be in the assembly of my people, nor be written in the record of the house of Israel, nor shall they enter into the land of rest." Oh, now we added something. See what Ezekiel added? He said, if you're not recorded in the house of Israel, then you are not part of the assembly. And if you're not part of the assembly, you're not going to enter into the land of rest. So this can count seriously. So we have a situation where a name in a book represented that you were living. A name that has been blotted out represented that you had died, or that there was no genealogy. And now we're told that if your name's not on the record of the house of Israel, they're not going to be allowed to enter into the land of Israel. I worked with a coach. He likes to say this statement. When you get a bunch of kids around, you're trying to get the right kids in, and they ought to start getting closer and closer to the line of scrimmage when you're trying to practice. He'll say, if you're not in, you're out. In other words, what he's saying is, if you don't need to be in there, scoot back a little bit. If you're in, you're in. If you're not in, you're out. That's kind of the idea, that we don't have our names written in this book. He says, if you're not in the record of the house of Israel, you're not going to enter into the land of Israel. So see how this concept has been taught, and it is fresh on their mind. Now we get to Psalm 87, verses 5 and 6. "And of Zion it will be said, this one and that one were born in her, and the Most High himself shall establish her. The Lord will record when he registers the peoples, this one was born there." So now we get the idea that this is God's register. God is the one recording who was born and who was of Jerusalem, who was of the nation. So the Lord registers and records the names. So now let's go all the way back to Exodus. Remember Moses went up to get the Ten Commandments on Mount Sinai, and kind of in a Barney Fife sort of way, he left his brother Aaron in charge, and that didn't last very long. And it wasn't any time at all that Aaron had the people, they had these golden calves created, and they were worshiping and dancing around the golden calves. And Moses came down, and he was furious with what Aaron had done. And Exodus chapter 32, verse 31 says, "Then Moses returned to the Lord and said, all these people have committed a great sin and have made for themselves a god of gold. Yet now, if you will forgive their sin, but if not, I pray, blot me out of your book which you have written." There it is. There's that book that God has written. There's this image that God has this book. And Moses is like, hey, just take me out of it. Just take me out. Blot my name out of the book. And go ahead and let the people be okay. And God responds. The Lord said to Moses, verse 33, Whoever has sinned against me, I will blot him out of my book. There you go. You transgress, you sin, you're going to have your name blotted out of the book that God has written. That's serious. That's a serious charge. That's something we really need to think about. This idea of blotting our name out of the book that's written. And our final Old Testament was Daniel, the 12th chapter. Now, I really like this concept of Daniel. I read a lot of commentators, and most will think that, well, this is in reference to some kind of end times judgment scene. I don't know that that's what it is. I think the book of Daniel was written to the nation of Israel and explained the history of the nation of Israel. Again, this may be one of these iceberg moments where he's really referencing Israel and the fall of Jerusalem, which would come up in the time after the time of Jesus, about the year AD 70. But I think we could probably get some end times as well as part of a kind of a secondary prophecy. But notice what says Daniel 12 and 1. Very confusing passage. It says, "And at that time Michael shall stand up, the great prince who stands watch over the sons of your people. And there shall be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation, even to that time. And at that time your people shall be delivered, every one who was found written in the book." What book? It's got to be the same concept of this book that's been taught. I don't know that Daniel really 100% understood this concept of the book as he was writing this down. But there's definitely something that has been taught throughout the scriptures. This idea that God has a book and our name better be in it. And it's possible to have our name not in the book. And it's also possible to have our name blotted out of the book. But I want you to notice the positive spin. It's written in the book. So if the name is written in the book, we're good. But notice in Psalm, did you notice that was a negative account? Psalm looked at the negative, what David did. He said in verse 27, our text again, add iniquity to their iniquity, and let them not come into your righteousness. Verse 28, let them be blotted out of the book of the living, and not be written with the righteous. Now here we have a negative concept. If we're blotted out of the book, we're not going to be written with the righteous. Which tells me, if we're not righteous, then we must be considered unrighteous. So there's kind of a positive and a negative spin on this concept. So here we go. A lot of Old Testament ideas, right? This idea of being blotted out of the book. Well, how does the Lord respond to it? How does that turn into a New Testament concept? Is it further referenced? And I believe the answer is yes. In Luke, the 10th chapter, this is a neat account. In Luke, the 10th chapter, remember, Jesus sent out 70. And he sends them out, and he gives them his powers. They have these spiritual gifts and powers, ability to do some tremendous things. The demons are even being subjected to the words of these 70. And without doubt, I mean, they're excited. They have seen things that they have never seen before. They have experienced things that they had never experienced. They were fired up as they returned back to Jesus from this missionary journey. It says, and the 70 returned with joy. They are pumped up, saying, Lord, even the demons are subject to us in your name. And he said to them, I saw Satan fall like lightning from heaven. Behold, I give you the authority to trample on serpents and scorpions and over all the power of the enemy, and nothing shall by any means hurt you. Then in verse 20, Jesus kind of tempers their excitement a little bit. He says, nevertheless, do not rejoice in this, that the spirits are subject to you, but rather rejoice because your names are written in heaven. What does that mean? He says these 70 have their names written in heaven. Again, this vision of this book, of God's book, that God is writing down our name, who's righteous and who is unrighteous. Says, what's really important is that your name is written in heaven. I love verse 10, and we're going to pick up again in Revelation. There's a certain format that you probably heard me talk about this before. I call it the not but system of writing. It's a logical argument. And so you'll see it again and again in the New Testament. He'll say, do not, and then he'll say something, and then he'll say, but do this. Not, but. That's what I put on that little QR code on the back. There's probably, I don't know, I've got a list of about 40 of them. that I found in the scripture. I just keep adding to it. Not something but this. You're sick, don't drink water, not water, but drink wine. That's not telling us to go be alcoholic whiners. He's not telling us to never drink water, only drink wine. That's not what it means. It's a style of argument. So if you got your QR code, there's your homework. I don't want to get into the whole not but, but look it up. There's a ton of them in there. It's a legal way of discussing something. It's really neat. You'll find it in the scripture. The idea is, this first part is important. The fact that spirits are subject to you, that's important. That you have these great powers. Don't get me wrong, 70. That's really cool that you can do that. And a snake can bite you and you can still live. I mean, that's awesome. But this is what he's emphasizing. This is the important part when it comes after the but. Rejoice because your names are written in heaven. All that other stuff is not that important. It pales in comparison to the fact that your name is written in heaven. So even Jesus has this concept of a name being written in heaven. We get to the book of Hebrews. I'm assuming it's the Apostle Paul here. But if you have come to Mount Zion, Hebrews 12 and 22, and to the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, to an innumerable company of angels, to the general assembly and church of the firstborn who are registered in heaven, to God the judge of all, to the spirits of just men made perfect, to Jesus the mediator of the new covenant. We are registered. It says it's a general assembly and church of the firstborn is registered in heaven to God, to Jesus, to the spirits of just men. I remember my grandpa. I've got one somewhere. My grandpa would have a register. ADHD guys like me, we can't do this. He would have something, and he would have every vehicle he ever bought, how much he paid for it, and then on subsequent lines, every expense he ever had, oil change, new belt, new tires. And then when he sold that down at the bottom, he would come up with a profit statement, how much money he made off of selling that car. And I've got a book, he made a register of every sale I think he ever did. I think that was transferred down to my dad. Somehow it skipped my generation. I don't know, I can't do it. I can't keep up with all that. But that's the idea of a register. It's a record of recording. And here we're told that the General Assembly and Church of the Firstborn are registered in heaven. It's an account. Paul has the same idea in Philippians, the 4th chapter. He's talking about a couple people in the congregation there in Philippi. I never can pronounce these words anywhere close. Eunia and Syntyche. I remember I did a lesson one time. I just called them E and S. Well, that's hard for me to pronounce. But it was these two women that were fighting, and they were having some sort of issue between the two of them. And he's trying to get these two women to get along. And so Paul says, I implore that you be of the same mind in the Lord. And I urge you also, true companion, help these women who labored with me in the gospel, with Clement also, and the rest of my fellow workers, wait for it, whose names are in the book of life. So now Paul picks up on this book of life. Where did that come from? Well, I'm assuming that Paul understands this revelation, that there's this book, this register, that was probably an authentic book at one time, but now it's being used on a spiritual plane. It's the book that God has written down. And let me tell you, we want to have our names in the book of life. And that takes us to Revelation, because this is kind of the most complete. In Revelation, the 3rd chapter, this is one of the 7 letters that's been sent out. There's a congregation by the name of Sardis. And Sardis is a really interesting city. It's a really interesting history lesson. I'm not going to tell you about it. But they had a problem sometimes with watching. And so I think John, when he writes this letter to Sardis, he uses this concept. You better be watching. You better be paying attention. It says, for you have a few names even in Sardis who have not defiled their garments. And they shall walk with me in white, for they are worthy. He who overcomes shall be clothed in white garments, and I will not blot out his name from the book of life. But I will confess his name before my Father and before his angels. So again, we have this book of life. And he says, there's some of y'all that have not had your name blotted out. He said, some have. Some people in Sardis, they decided not to walk in purity. He talks about walking in white. That's the idea of walking in purity, being righteous. He says those that didn't do that have had their name blotted out. Did you pick up on the not button? Did you pick up? He says, I will not blot out his name. That's important. But what's the most important part? But I will confess his name before my Father and before his angels. That's what's important. Having a name in a book is great, but you know what's even better? Having the fact that Jesus will stand before God and confess our name in heaven that this guy's okay. He's going to vouch for us. He's our advocate. He said, Matthew, if you confess me, I'll confess your name before God in heaven. That's what's important. That not only is our name in heaven, but we have an advocate. We have Jesus who is willing to stand up and say, this guy needs to go in. This guy's good. That's what's important. What about the names that have been blotted out? Do you think Jesus is going to stand up and say, we see that name right there that's been blotted out? You know, really, he's a pretty good guy. I don't think it's going to work like that. We have to maintain our end of the covenant. Revelation 13 and 8 says, all who dwell on the earth will worship him. That him is in reference. It's this whole passage about the beast of the sea. But anyway, he says, whose names have not been written in the book of life of the Lamb. So now we've added a little part here. The book of life of the Lamb. This is the book that Jesus maintains. That Jesus controls. And Jesus knows whose name is on it and whose name is not and who's been blotted out. And those that are, he is willing to stand and confess our names before the Father, which is in heaven. Told you, it kind of gets full circle here in Revelation, doesn't it? Try Revelation 20, verse 12. Now this, without a doubt, is the vision here of the final judgment. He says, and I saw the dead, small and great, standing before God, and books were opened. And another book was opened, which is the book of life. And the dead were judged according to their works by the things which were written in the books. And the sea gave up the dead who were in it, and death and Hades delivered up the dead who were in them. And they were judged, each one according to his works. Then death and Hades were cast into the lake of fire. This is the second death. And anyone not found written in the book of life was cast into the lake of fire. So now this is a whole bunch of books being brought forth. Some, it says, the books were opened. A lot of people think that those are probably in reference to the old covenant and the new covenant. That kind of makes sense to me that folks should be judged. If you lived under the old covenant, how you matched up to the old covenant. And those that lived under the new covenant, how you matched to the new covenant. And then it said another book was opened. This book of life. He's looking for our name. It'd be a lot easier nowadays. You could just type it in and hit search. And it would just find our name. But that's what he's looking for. Because it says, anyone not found written in the book of life is cast into the lake of fire. So Mike said, is this a hell and brimstone lesson? Probably about as close as you're going to get out of me. I'm not one that's going to get loud and be able to do that like the old-timey preachers. But yeah, this is a hell and brimstone lesson. Because if our name is not written in the book of life, he says we're going to be cast into the lake. Finally, Revelation 21:27. There's this picture drawn of what he calls the New Jerusalem, which is an image, I'm pretty sure, of heaven. He says, but there shall by no means enter it, the New Jerusalem, anything that defiles or causes an abomination or a lie, but only those who are written in the Lamb's Book of Life. So we've got to be in the Lamb's Book. So don't worry about growing that 14-foot mustache. I mean, that's pretty awesome. That's a pretty epic scene. If you had a 15-foot mustache, your picture could be in his place in the next edition of the Guinness World Book of Records. That's cool. That's epic. But it's not that important. What's important is our name is written in the Lamb's Book of Life. I want you to notice here it says, anything that defiles or causes an abomination or a lie is not going to be allowed. You're not going to be allowed. That's exactly what he's saying in Psalm 69. Add iniquity to their iniquity, and let them not come into your righteousness. So you can't be righteous and sort of righteous. You're either righteous or you're unrighteous. You can't be sort of kind of fitting into it. He says you're not going to be written with the righteous if we don't uphold our end of the deal. If we don't uphold our end of the covenant, we're not righteous. And if we're not righteous, we're not going to be named in the Lamb's Book of Life. And we are not going to be allowed to enter this new Jerusalem. If we defile it, if we cause an abomination, if we cause a lie. That's just what the Bible says. Revelation 22, 18 and 19. Boy, what was going to be the end of the Bible? This concept. For I testify that everyone who hears the words of the prophecy of this book, if anyone adds to these things, God will add unto the plagues that are written in this book. And if anyone takes away from the words of the book of this prophecy, God shall take away his part from the book of life, from the holy city, and from the things which are written in this book. You want to know why I don't want to mess around with innovations? You want to know why I don't like the concept of bringing in some Calvinistic doctrine or what have you? You want to know why I'm a little bit hesitant and I want to make sure that we do things properly and the right way, even though it may not be the most popular way, even though it may not make that much sense, and might be some, you know, some better ways to do it or some easy. Let me tell you why. It goes right there. I don't want my name and my part taken away out of the book of life. And that's what's serious. He says don't add to things, don't take away, don't change it. This is all we need. This is it. Don't add to it or change it. Because if you do, you can have your name taken away from the book of life, from the holy city, and all the glories that we can undertake. So let's finish this up. I think the book of Revelation talks about three categories of people. I'm going to tell you, if you get online and you start searching, most people are not going to agree with this because Calvinistic doctrine is just taken over. And the idea of this concept of once saved, always saved, it's just so prevalent in the religious world today. It's a very dangerous doctrine. They're going to tell you one of two categories of people. Here's what I think. I think there's those whose names are written in the book of life. Boy, that's where we want to be. We want to be in category one. We want our name written in the book of life. Number two, there are those whose names are not written in the book of life. We don't want to be in that group. Here's where me and the Calvinist people disagree. I'm afraid that there's those whose names were written in the book of life, but then they have been blotted. Is it possible for a Christian to lose their place? I say yes. If we don't fulfill our covenant, if we don't fulfill our end of the obligation, absolutely. I think it is possible for us to lose our name being in the book of life. Now, Calvinist doctrine would say, no, there's only two options. Either you're in it or you're not. Doesn't matter what you do, you're predestined. And doesn't matter how you live your life. If you're on the book of life, you're in. That's a very dangerous, dangerous doctrine to uphold. So my question is, can our names be removed from the book of life? Sure sounds like it, doesn't it? It's exactly what Revelation 3 and 5 said. He said, your name can be blotted out. We don't remain faithful to the covenant. If we don't do what we're supposed to do, yes, I believe we can have our name blotted out of the Lamb's Book of Life. Let's think about what we're talking about now. From Exodus to Revelation, this concept of the Book of Life has been taught. Sometimes we get a little bit more meaning, a little bit more instruction on it. There's also some passages I didn't have. Malachi talks about the Book of Remembrance, and there's things of that nature. But this is what we're talking about this morning. God told Moses that transgressors would be blotted out of the book. The law of Moses warned about names being blotted out from under heaven. In fact, if your lineage did not continue, your name was literally marked out of the genealogy of the Jewish people. Psalm 69 spoke of the book of the living. Daniel said that our names must be written in the book. Jesus taught about having our names written in heaven. Paul praised those in Philippi who had their names written in the book of life. Hebrews spoke of those who had been registered and recorded in heaven. And Revelation draws the most complete picture of the three groups of people in relation to the book of life. Those that have their name in the book, those that do not have their name, and those that did, but have been blotted out. So I'm going to leave with one question. The most important question we need to worry about. Is our name written in the book of life? If it's not, we better fix it. If it's not, we better find a way to get our name written in the Lamb's Book of Life.